Welcome to A Lemon A Day, a mini-series to heal yourself and change your life. I am so excited to bring you this new fortnightly supplement to Lemonade, where every 2 weeks, I'll bring you an interview with an incredible practitioner from a life-changing healing modality. I am asked quite a lot about what I've done to heal myself over the years, and it's a question I'm always too happy to answer because I love sharing the different ways I've worked on my emotional, physical, spiritual, and psychological health. So I thought, why not bring the very people who've changed my life to you? None of these interviews are sponsored or gifted in any way. I can assure you of that. So every word of endorsement is because the therapeutic practice has genuinely enriched my life, or I am hanging to try it out very soon. Sue Jones is a counsellor and clinical hypnotherapist with almost 2 decades of experience in the field. Hypnotherapy helps to rewire the subconscious thoughts in our brain that inadvertently control our lives. In fact, 90% of our brain power is stored right there in the subconscious. This form of therapy can be helpful to treat a range of conditions from trauma to phobias to depression, anxiety, migraines and even digestive issues. I started sessions with Sue earlier this year to help treat the chronic bouts of fatigue I was experiencing, and I don't know how she did it, but after just one session, I honestly felt like an entirely new woman. It really was incredible. Sue is so kind, empathetic and gentle. She's so passionate about her work and I love chatting to her about this healing modality. Just a note, the content provided in A Lemon A Day is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis or treatment. Always, always seek the health advice of your GP. Sue, thank you so much for jumping on the Lemonade podcast. How are you doing, Sue? It's been ages.
It has. Time just flies and it's really lovely. It's a pleasure to be here and wonderful. Good to see your face again.
Yay. So good to see you too. Now, Sue, there's been quite a few requests to have you on the podcast. When I shared a couple of episodes ago about how profoundly you helped me when I wasn't feeling too well at the beginning of the year. And then I had a few people saying, what is this all about? What is hypnotherapy about? What does it all mean? I need to know more. So when I started this kind of supplement of the podcast, I just thought I just had to have you on here for you to explain it rather than me explain it. So before we get there though, I'd love to just know a little bit about you and how you got to where you are today.
My journey. Yes. Yeah. It's interesting. Life takes us on journeys, doesn't it? I started off, working in childcare. So I was always working with managing people and understanding how brains worked. I loved that aspect of childcare and I was doing behavioral management plans way before they even became a thing. It was just made sense to me, and understanding how the human mind works is fascinating. So I started there, and then when my kids were about teenagers, I decided I would study psychology. And I started studying that, and I thought, oh gosh, it's going to be a long road. Mm-hmm. And as you can imagine, and also what I was studying was more around statistics. So it was like, oh my gosh, like this is, you know, while that's really good and it's valuable, I wanted to be more on the coal face helping people. So I swapped to psychotherapy and I studied that. And so I was working with that and it was great. And I had a few tools in my toolbox then. But what I also noticed was that we were trying to change the subconscious programming because, you know, people say, oh, well, they shouldn't eat too much chocolate or they shouldn't smoke cigarettes. And they know it's like smoking, for example, it's bad for your health. I shouldn't do it. You know, the kids are watching, blah, blah, all that. But in the moments, that's not what happens. That subconscious information comes up and it goes, you need that cigarette or the chocolate or whatever it is. And so we go for that. So I started to realize that there was only limited power in what I was doing. While as it was soothing and helpful to people, I wanted to pump up the volume a bit. And so I started, I was actually working with a supervisor and I said, I'm doing visualizations. So I'm thinking I'm working on the border of hypnosis here. So I'm a bit cautious, you know, maybe I'm stepping into territory. I'm not sure what I'm doing. And he's like, well, then go study it. And I went, oh my gosh, of course.
So you were doing counseling and then you just thought, I feel like I can go that layer deeper with hypnosis. And
I know. I guess we've all got this idea of what hypnosis is that we've seen in movies, and you put people, and almost like, you know, it's always portrayed as if putting people under a spell, which it is not that. Can you tell us what exactly it is?
And just spot on there, because if it was, I would have organized my husband much better a lot earlier, right?
And you'd only need people for a session, and then they'd be magically healed. Wouldn't that be amazing? Then people would be paying you so much money.
I know. Yeah, so definitely that's so how does it work is your question. Yeah, so how does it work? So what we, there's different brainwave frequencies, and we operate in different ways, and we understand that because if we're conscious and alert and we're paying attention to someone saying really exciting, then we're focused. If someone's waffling on in a lecture and you start nodding off, it's a different brain space, yeah? And so we're not, when we don't know what the lecturer has said, right? So what we want to do is find what brain frequency works best for changing the information in the subconscious, right? Now, so the subconscious is really interesting because it's out of our line of sight. Mm. So that's where the thoughts we don't hear, and yet they're the drivers, yeah? It's not that we think we should have another cigarette, it's that we feel that we should have a cigarette, and that is in the subconscious.
Wow, so it's powerful, that subconscious then. That's where everything, all huge, our behaviors are coming from and everything, right?
Huge. The version I have of myself, like as in who I think I'll be tomorrow, is much better than reality.
So true. You wake up with an idea of how you're going to be that day and what you're going to do, but then that's the very conscious level, right? The subconscious is what you're actually going to do and how you're actually probably going to eat a bag of chips on the couch and not do a workout.
Perfect. I'll never yell at my children. Ha, ha, ha.
Sure. Yeah. And what kind of thoughts, I guess, are originating in this subconscious then and then manifesting into everyday life?
Okay, so yeah, that's where, and if we continue with that analogy for smoking, for example, it's thoughts that we have constructed, and belief systems that are constructed. Usually, you know, a lot of it's in those early years where we're forming a map of how the world works and what relationships are like, because we are relational creatures, and that's super, super important. So the thoughts that could come up there, it may be, for example, I had a client who was struggling with weight, and I've got a gastric hypnotic. Hypnotic gastric banding program that I do, and I did that with her, but I also went, there's something more happening here, and so I took her to the emotion, took her to, you know, where's this feeling come from, just before you had to eat, because, you know, it became evident that she was eating not just when she was hungry, but it was like if she wasn't busy, this is the tell, all right, if I'm not busy then I'm eating, and I went so you've always got to be doing something. So what's the emotion that's happening there when you're not hungry, but you just feel that drive, that push? What's that about? That's a subconscious thought. And this is important, right? The feelings, the emotions are what tell us that something's going on there. So emotions are super important to listen to and understand. Yeah. So we went to that, and she went back to a childhood where she had had abuse. And one of the things, like when we're in those sorts of situations, we're always looking for how we can control, how we can be safer. And her father used to say to her, it's good to eat.
Yes. Wow.
Yeah. So if you want your stress to disappear, that's what her brain coded. If you want the stress to disappear, then you should be a good eater.
Wow. And that's lodged so deep in that subconscious, isn't it? That you're not even aware of where or how that's come to be.
It's been running around in her life forever, and she had no idea that it was there. So when you slow down, and I accessed that with hypnosis. So that was more of a there's hypnosis that I do, which is more like with the programs, like the hypnotic gastric banding, or the gut directed hypnosis, or the smoking cessation, which they're a little more generic. But I always tailor things for people anyway. That's the beauty of having an individual therapist as opposed to an online audio that you can get, which there can be value in those too, but it just pumps up the power because it's more individualized. But what I did with her was more investigative hypnosis. So that experience she had, because this is the important thing, is that remember, oh, I love this stuff.
Every specialist I've had on the podcast gets so into it because they're talking about the thing that lights them up. So they're just the most animated conversation. So I'm loving this.
Yeah. So, yeah. So the emotion's the important thing because it tells us where to go. And the subconscious is where the emotion is, right? And it thinks in pictures and metaphors, which is why we have crazy dreams and things like that, right? But it's so the emotion's the way to get there, or you can do it through hypnosis. When you change the emotions, that's when it changes how you operate, right? So if I've got a subconscious belief saying that I need to eat all the time because then I'll be a good girl and then my stresses will drop, then that's going to be pushing and driving and poking at me. It's that pressure. It's the wallpaper in the background that's just there, and you're feeling that pressure all the time, but you don't quite know why you do it. Yeah. So the way to change that, if I say to you, okay, stop smoking cigarettes, stop being scared of dogs, stop eating so much, and this is why you're eating so much, you go, okay, but it's a cognitive thing, right? And it only goes so far. Well, as if we can change it emotionally, and that's what I did with her in the hypnosis. I went, okay, so we went back to that event and she could put it together. And I brought, she visualized herself as a child in that. And I brought the her from the future to that child. And she re-nurtured her. She hugged her and told her it was not her fault. And it was, it was just beautiful.
That's so beautiful. Yeah, my God. Yeah. We had very amazing moments working together too. I just remember going into the session and just feel it was just a normal day, kind of on autopilot, not feeling emotional in the slightest. And then we're doing the hypnosis together and all of a sudden I'm like bursting into tears, crying hysterically. I'm like, where did this come from? I was having a very normal, just a very average day before that, but it just can access these parts of you that you didn't even know were still just below the surface waiting to be tapped into. And I'm really interested in that, as you said, you've got the programs around eating and smoking and things, but are people coming to you for those emotional reasons and they've gone through trauma or they've gone through something, maybe a major life event or upheaval, and they're looking for some kind of, soothing, I suppose? How can hypnotherapy help that?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So to start off with, trauma's part of life. We all get trauma. If I can say life's like a washing machine. You get tumbled in it, right? We all get trauma to some degrees. Unfortunately, some people get some really tough trauma, right? So it's that trauma leaves scars, even if it's a little nick on you. Yeah. And what we need to do is heal that to free us up. Because one of the points you said before, and I went, yes, that's a really good point, is that when we do the hypnosis, it's because there's parts of us we're not aware of. And that leaves us a little fragmented, not necessarily huge, but, depending on the length of trauma. But for some of us, it's always that part feels disenfranchised for the rest, because it's like that part does not feel heard. So it takes away that feeling of being whole, and we can't work as effectively. When we can bring those parts and resolve those issues, we get a sense of being, the emotional feeling you get is like more settled, more home and
home. That's the word that was coming to my head just as you were saying that, like that feeling of full circle, of coming home, of being, things just fitting in somehow.
Yes.
That didn't before.
And that's the point, is about what I was saying before, the emotions before. When you make an emotional shift, that changes everything. Mm. Yeah, that changes everything, because that means that that emotional shift is, you're not fighting with your subconscious anymore, which is the majority of your brain power. It's like, you think you're going to be a good person, you think you're not going to smoke another cigarette, but it keeps driving at you because the subconscious is going, no, I have to, because often the belief that's held by smokers is that this is how I belong. They usually started smoking as a teenager, and I'll be cool like everybody else. Oh, I feel like I belong now. And so to say to someone, all right, just quit, their subconscious is going, what the hell? I won't belong.
Are they kind of like, are there a certain amount, and I'm sure they'd be endless, but are there a certain amount, or like a few core beliefs that kind of drive everyone's behavior? Are there kind of 3 to 5 that you can think of that we all might resonate with, or we all might, contain within us?
Oh, you're so much fun to talk to.
It's because I'm a counselling student nerd, so I'm like picking apart your brain. Usually you're picking apart my brain, but I'm doing it back to you.
Okay, good on you. So, absolutely, because we're all mammals with mammalian brains. And the research shows us now that the primary drive we have is bonding. We are bonding animals. It's the most important thing. And if you think of it from an evolutionary point of view, then if we're not bonded in a pack, if we're not tribal, then we're in danger. We can't hunt effectively. We can't protect ourselves from danger, not as many eyes. So immediately our subconscious is going, whoa, this is not feeling quite so safe. So things that pull us closer, soothe us.
Yeah.
Things that push us further apart, stress us out. And it may not, if we've got good balance inside, we can go off to work and do the day and all that and be fine. And we come home and we can just recalibrate with our partner or whatever. And then we're fine. But if you've had a really tough day, then it's harder to do that. If you're in isolation, not that we'd know anything about that, huh?
No, not at all. No. Especially in Melbourne. No idea.
Yes. Because isolation is toxic to the human brain. And that's been known for a long time because we're tribal. We are components of the tribe. And that's so important for us to get. So therefore, out of that stems these emotional needs. Am I seen? Am I heard? Because if you've got a partner, for example, where you're going, and the boss said this and this happened and I was just so upset, and they're just going, You're going... What usually happens is you go on and on about it because you're going, you're not hearing me. I'm not feeling hurt.
So true. And you keep kind of rabbiting on about it, just trying to be heard and getting more hysterical. Gosh, this doesn't sound familiar at all. I have no idea what you're talking about.
And then your partner goes, oh, you go on for so long. And it's like, well, if you listened.
Yeah, you're just wanting to be heard. You're just wanting to be seen and heard. That's one of those core beliefs, isn't it, that just over time then we try and find all these coping mechanisms just to soothe that, to make us feel better.
And if your audience are interested in that sort of thing, they might want to look up on YouTube the still face experiment.
I don't know about that. I'll look into that.
it's really interesting. It's a really, I love experiments.
Okay, fantastic. I'll have a look into that. What I loved working with you as well is about how we access the body so much as well. And, you know, we investigated all these trauma responses, you know, the flight and fight, everyone knows that, but we'd also look into freeze and when I feel my body get going to that, or even fawning as well. Can you talk us through, I guess, about how our bodies can be signals into what is going on subconsciously that we're sometimes not even aware of is happening?
Yes. And our bodies are so important. And if I can't get clients to connect with and how they feel emotionally, like if they just say good or bad, which doesn't give me much to work with, I will often focus on the body. And it's good to do that anyway, because what does it feel like? And it's so interesting because it's almost like the body is a metaphor too. Like they talk about, restriction in their throat. And then as you work with it, you go, well, they've been wanting to say this for a long time and felt they couldn't, those sorts of things. So there's metaphors there. Paying attention to your body, if things don't feel right, stop and really listen and go, what? And even if you can access, whether it's anxiety in your stomach or tightness in your chest, sometimes it's a tapping foot. What's that tapping foot? Yeah. And so it's like asking that part, what's wrong? But you've got to be very gentle and, very nurturing with it. Just, what's wrong, sweetie? What's happening here? Why is your heart fluttering? Can my heart talk to me and tell me what's happening here? And that brings up information. Emotions are where the wisdom is, and accessing that is often easier with the body. The body keeps the score, Bessel van der Kolk or something like that. Brilliant book. It's a bit of a heavy read, but he shows that trauma is held in the body and it comes genetically as well as, it's contagious. Like we all know that. We've hang around someone who's anxious and by the end of the having that visit you go, oh, I'm done now, because it's just hard work hanging around that. It's contagious.
Totally.
So Yeah, so that body response is so important. There's so, it's like, it's the, if you're not listening to your body, it's the equivalent of having the flashing lights go off in your dashboard of your car and going, I'll just put some tape over that so I can't see it. It's not really important.
Yeah.
It's fine.
And it just keeps getting, I find with me, you know, if you keep ignoring it, or I've seen it, people around me ignoring it, you just get, it gets worse and louder and louder and louder until something you can get unwell or hurt yourself or, you know, have a big fall. And I found that really interesting when we were working together that you helped me do that about talking to yourself as if you're a child, and you would say, what would you be saying to your son right now? And you know, the thoughts that come up in my head is, you know, I'm 31. How stupid are you to think that? Why would you be reacting like that? You know, grow up, you know, it's been X amount of years and, you know, how are you not better? All these thoughts. And I think, you know, you're like, but would you speak to your son like that if he was having a tough time? Yes. And we never would speak to someone we loved like that. But why do we, you know, we speak to ourselves like that. And I think that was just such a soothing thing that you taught me, and that, you know, the listeners could get something out of it too. And that now I do it now. It's like, if I'm feeling anxious for no reason, it's just like, oh, hang on, you know, asking yourself, what is wrong? What's going on in there? Like, you know, is everything okay? What can I do to help? What are we needing right now, rather than beating yourself up? Where does that come from? I guess that, and I know I'm not alone in that, that driver to, I guess, go, oh, look how stupid you are. Look how dumb you are. What are you doing? You know, grow up, get over it, get with it. You know, what's wrong with you? Where does that come from?
Yeah, that, yeah, pull your socks up. You're a big girl now. Yes, absolutely. And that's, I mean, it's very cultural. It's come, you know, it's come down from our parenting and, you know, and society around. So that, because we used to think, oh, I love this stuff. We used to think that, oh my gosh, John Blowby did studies at the end of World War II, and he was working with orphans that were orphaned through the war, and he was the one that realized that children separated from parents were missing the bond, and the bond that was so important for their nurturing, and that's why they were having all these behavioral issues. So we sort of learned from that study, and it took a little time to filter out into society, but we learned that children need more than, they're not just cattle where you just let them bring themselves up. There's more to it. There's that nurturance. They need the closeness, they need the security, they need assurance, encouragement, all those emotional needs, and that's a, you know, an important job. So we learned that, but then, as a society, we went, okay, that's good if you're a child, but you know what? You're 18, you're 21, you're 30 now. It's time to grow up. What on earth is wrong with you? And it drives me nuts when people talk about people being needy. I go, well, you're only needy if you've got a need, right?
That is the quote of the century, absolutely. When something is not being met.
Yes, correct. If you haven't had food for a couple of days, well, you will be needy for food. Mm. It makes sense. But in our culture, we've got this thing about, oh, codependence and neediness. What it is, I mean, you don't say that to a baby. What, I haven't picked you all up all day and you're yelling at me? What's wrong with you? We go, yeah, it needs the comfort. It needs the reassurance. And it's the same with us as adults. And, you know, I loved your terminology there when you said about talking to yourself, because we need to, you know what, I don't care how big and hairy you are, underneath it all, we're just soft-hearted things. We really are. We put up these protections, which we need to get through our day, but we also need someone to be able to step into that emotional world, and we need gentleness and softness. Like you said before, is that, you know, like if you were had an emotion inside, or you were responding to something, and your self-talk was, what the hell's wrong with you? Come on, pull your socks up. You need to try harder.
This is embarrassing. I mean,
Yes. Yeah, do you want your best friend? Do you want your best friend talking to you like that? Or do you want someone that's going to go, hey, are you okay? You look a little stressed. Do you want to talk? Yeah. I mean, you can feel that response inside us. Yeah. One pushes us up and we start to put up those barriers and those boundaries, and I'm fine. Yeah. And the other one, we go, oh, I can actually stop running in my life or stop the business for a moment and sit with me and just notice what I feel. What's it like in there, sweetie? Isn't it so interesting? Like, you might call a friend, lovely or sweetheart or whatever, or, you know, some of your relatives, those things, but to look yourself in the mirror and say, hey, sweetheart, like, we don't We haven't been trained to talk like that to ourselves.
It feels foreign, you even saying that, like the thought of kind of talking to myself like that. Yeah, it makes me go, oh no, I've never spoken to myself with such softness. And isn't that sad? But this is why I love this work. And this is why I think this, it's just, it's the most incredible layer of talk therapy. And that one that people should consider if they've gone through a tough time. And as you said, it could be anything. It could be any kind of belief, because we've all gone through something at some point. You know, if someone's wanting to kind of delve into this and they're thinking of booking in with you, what kind of things should they know, and why would they be coming to you, I suppose?
Okay. So, yeah, the subconscious is where the power is. So hypnosis or emotionally focused therapy is the other tool I have, which is beautiful and works brilliantly with couples. That's an amazing thing too. But those are that's where the power is. So if you feel like you're not really getting anywhere, like if you feel like I'm trying to change something or I'm struggling to find my happiness, and we all have that at moments, and depression is, suffering is part of life. There's times when things happen to us where we should be depressed. It's not necessarily, yeah. So we need to be more humanistic about this. And when they should come to me or, some other, when they should seek therapy, I guess, is when they're struggling with that and it's affecting their quality of life ongoing. And because, you know, it's like, I sort of think, well, why would you put your happiness off any longer than you have to, right? Yeah. So to me, that work, it can be hard work in the session sometimes. Depends on what work you're doing. If you're doing investigative hypnosis and you're doing some repair, it can be tricky sometimes depending on trauma levels. But lost it again.
It's so rewarding though. I think that, you know, that's the thing. It's so, it is tricky in the moment and it can be.
Yeah.
Challenging, but like, you know, I can speak from my own experience when we'd finish a call, there's a lightness, you know, there's something that's being released off your shoulders. There's something that's being released and it's really powerful. How many sessions would somebody need what's the ballpark?
Give you some ballpark on those sorts of things. Yeah. So smoking cessation, I do 3 sessions. The hypnogastric banding is 3 sessions. Gut directed hypnosis is 6 sessions. I did, you know, a couple of sessions for one guy, and that's an interesting story. And that was about him not being able to get out of bed in the morning. Let's put that aside for a moment at least. So it depends on what level you want to do. And a lot of people like to come for, like, say, 3 or 4 sessions. And even on the first session, you usually get a feel and know whether you connect with someone or not. And if you don't, move on. It's, you know, very, you know, people need to meet each other at the right level. I have clients that will do 4 sessions, for example, and then they'll get enough out of that that they'll go off and incorporate that in their life. And then when things come up again, they'll come back. And then, you know, like with the emotionally focused therapy, which is couples therapy, that, and I have, and the people who have big trauma, then it can be more long-term. So it can be, I've had people get amazing changes in their relationship within, say, 20 sessions, sustainable long-term stuff. And then others, because of the trauma level and that, and when you're working with couples, you can have double trauma, so it gets a bit more complicated. Yeah, then it can actually be a year or something.
Love that. I think that was such an important point you made, that, you know, it can take only a few sessions, but then you need that time to integrate it. You can't just constantly, I think with me, I found you can't constantly be on the hamster wheel of self-development, because it needs time to actually sink in and process and use the skills that you've learned in real life, right? You can't always just be studying for the exam. You kind of actually have to go out and do it. What about someone who, I know I've connected with you over Zoom, so that was awesome. So it doesn't matter where you live. What if someone perhaps at this moment in time doesn't quite have the budget? What can they be doing to support themselves in this? But they're so interested. What can they be doing to support themselves in this
You're
way?
You're talking about hypnosis, or are you talking about that general? Yeah,
hypnosis? I think hypnosis, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there is. Okay, so one of the things I do too is that as you know, when I do hypnosis, I often do a recording. Mm. So if you're doing investigative hypnosis, that's a different thing. But if it's a, you know, and I do it with a smoking cessation program, for example, and all those programs I do, there's always a recording you take home, because the recording is cheap therapy, right? You keep playing it during the week, put it on at bedtime, go off to sleep. It won't matter because your brain is just letting it go in, which is why you shouldn't have the TV on when you go to sleep at night.
Yes. Yeah. All those people that fall asleep to true crime podcasts too.
I know. Put a lullaby on. Yeah. So the recordings help keep the cost down. So sometimes I've had people that we've done perhaps a couple of the investigative hypnosis, and then we've done a recording that helps with general anxiety and things like that. But I have got some recordings which are more general. People use them because what you're trying to do is reprogram and brainwash yourself in a good way.
Yeah. This has been such a beautiful chat, and I've loved speaking to you and hearing all about this, and it's making me want to book it again with you so you can look back in my brain. I will pop all the links to your work in the show notes, so if people are interested in getting in touch. But otherwise, thank you so much for being so generous with your time and your information. It was such a pleasure to speak to you again.
Absolutely. It was just plain fun for me, so.
Wonderful. Thanks again, Sue.
All right. Take care, gorgeous. Bye-bye.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of A Lemon A Day. I'll pop all the links in the show notes. In the meantime, if you can hit subscribe, leave a positive review, hit 5 stars and share on social media. Any combination of those things, I'd be so appreciative. Until next time, chat soon.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.